I am joined by Acting Dean Dave Bodwin. And I just learned that I could even say it Bodwin or something like that, right? Right, Dave?
Well, if you're in Canada, I suppose.
There you go. So, you know, there's variations there. And I think it's very appropriate because we're going to talk about arts. And I feel that that's how arts are. Arts are like, you know, with accents and flares. And so I think that your name is very appropriate for that.
Thank you.
I also have the Acting Associate Dean, Jeremy Bomberg. I did not ask you how to say it. I felt that I was going to get this one. And here I am reading it. And I'm like, I don't know.
It's perfect. Nailed it.
Great. And as I said earlier, we're going to talk about the arts. We're going to talk about HEC has a robust program in the arts. I am a graduate of this program, actually. And Dave, I've said this story many times before. I don't think I've ever mentioned your name, though. But and I don't know if you remember, but it was a summer semester. It was my last semester. I was trying to make it my last semester, and I needed just, I think, three design classes that I needed to take. And so I put them all together in a summer course, and I was just really trying to get through them. At that time, my degree was business communications. And I quite honestly, design and you know, those type of things, not necessarily my forte. And you were my teacher for one of them. And I think you saw that. I think you saw how much I was struggling with the class and that I was not really, you know, showing all of my passion and all my potential. And I remember you had a really honest conversation with me. The only other people that I had had that conversation with were my advisors. But for my teachers, you were the only one who, you know, and you approached me and you said, you know, what do you want to do with your career? What do you want to do with your life? Like, why are you taking these classes? Because I see that you're struggling so much. And you know, you're really trying so hard. I don't know that this is necessarily, you know, what you want to do. And I share with you, I want to do radio and television and all of that. And you were like, well, why aren't you? Like, And you opened the door for me, quite honestly. I mean, you switched my gears immediately. You were like, we have the program, we have these classes, we have this, we have that. And I shared with you some of the challenges and the things that I felt were going to stop me from having a career in this, you know, being a mom, being a non-traditional student, and all of the other barriers that I was seeing for myself. And you pushed me and you were like, it's okay. You can still get your career. You can still make it. And I thank you. That stuck with me and that lives with me. And that's why I am sitting here today, you know, and I am at HEC Radio, or Dragon Digital Radio rather, at this time. And, you know, that's why my career is what it is. So
well, you're very welcome. You're sitting there today because of your hard work and dedication, not so much mine. And I know at HCC, you've done fantastic work. It's fabulous to see.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you. But you were the one who gave me that push to just pursue my dream, really, and not just fall into what I thought was the correct path for myself at that point in my life, you know, like how I saw that I could make a living. And, you know, you pushed me out of that comfort zone and you said, no, follow your passion, follow your dream. You can still do it. So,
thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I've told the story before, but I don't think I've ever actually mentioned your name. Like, I've always said there was a teacher who made this great difference in my life, and I'm really honored to be speaking with you today and interviewing you today.
Wow.
So
the honor's mine. Thank you.
And I love to hear your stories. I love to hear, you know, Dave, how you got to be where you are today, and same thing for Jeremy. So just find out a little bit about you guys, and then we'll dive into everything else that HEC has to offer for the arts. So Dave, let's start with you.
Where I started in art?
Yeah, or like, you know, like just a little bit about yourself, how you got to be where you are today, and yeah, where that passion comes from.
Sure. Well, I have to just share a tiny story in that ties back to HCC. It's so weird. So I started at a community college in North Carolina. And then for one semester, then I came up to Maryland and finished up some gen ed at Anne Arundel. And then I transferred into Frostburg. And it's interesting because I always did art and design just on my own in high school and middle school. I never had any formal training. Like I would, I would find really interesting pictures in magazines, and I'd go to the library with a ton of change, and I would Xerox them in the copier machines, and I would blow them way up so that all you saw was little dots, and then I tile everything back together. So up close, you just saw the dots, then moving back. And of course, when you're, 14 or 15, you're like, wow, that's so amazing. And it was just so fun to do that. Then I started playing with color. And so as part of my general education at Anne Arundel, I took just 2D basic design. And somebody said, Dave, you do a lot of this stuff. You might want to do that. And so I did. And I knew that point. I mean, I was an English major first, then I was a psychology major. And then after I took that course, I was like, I'm going to be a designer. End of discussion. I love this. You know, like you talk about discovering that passion. And so I got into an art and design program at Frostburg. And then after that, I interned in Baltimore City at a firm. And then I worked in studios and corporations for several years. So I had that studio experience where you work on tons of different client projects. And then I had experience in corporations where you're just designing for that company. So I had that. And then a little while down the line, the professor who was my teacher through all my levels of design at Frostburg called me one day, and she had transitioned over to Frederick Community College. And she said, would you be interested in teaching an intro to the Macintosh course? And I said, I don't know. Am I qualified to do that? And she said, well, yeah, she gave me the best advice in my teaching career. She says, the students want to know what you know. And so, taking it like that, I just kind of wrote a little syllabus, and she really helped me along the way develop. It's just a one credit class. And then she said, how would you like to teach web design? Because in my career, I went into web design. So I was a web designer and scripter. And I said, well, okay, I guess I'm ready for that. So this was like a 3-credit actual college course. And so I did that for many years. And I slowly began to realize, I really love education. I love being in this environment. So, you would work in design studio for hours and hours and hours, and that's rewarding. But then that, hour and 50 minutes of class twice a week, I'd come home and just say, boy, that was fantastic. And so, some career things happened, and I went to graduate school and received my MFA. And along that time, I was teaching at FCC as an adjunct. And then a position came open full time, and I applied for it and was very lucky. I knew many of the other adjuncts who applied, and I thought, I'm never going to get this job. This is the competition. And so I was very, very fortunate to get the full time position. And so that's where I am now. But the funny story that ties back to HTC was that there was an adjunct at that time teaching in art named Bonnie Prince. And I always thought she always looked familiar to me. And one day we were chatting, I said, Bonnie, did you ever work in the print field? Were you a print rep for a company? She goes, no, I never did that. I said, well, were you ever in design? Like, I feel like I've met you, but I can't put my finger on it. She said, well, maybe I just have one of those faces, and we made a big joke about it. And then my wife and I were moving, and I was going through some old books and things as we were packing, and I found one of my journals from Anne Arundel, like back in those days. And I was flipping through it, and I saw the name Bonnie Prince. She was my 2D design teacher that taught that class in Gen Ed that hooked me on design. So I couldn't wait to see her. I said, Bonnie, I know where we've met. Do you remember teaching at Anne Arundel? She didn't remember me from those days, but that was so cool to run into her again and share with her because of your class, I went into this field and it served me well, and I tried to do my best. And so that's my story.
That's a beautiful story. And, that yeah. really speaks volumes of, the power of education and the power of having yeah. great teachers and great influences yeah. on your way. Jeremy, let's hear from you.
I actually have a similar background starting out that Dave did. In high school, art was just a hobby. It was a lot of fun, something I enjoyed doing. A lot of illustration, a lot of character drawings. But I didn't see a career path in that. I was fortunate to go to the University of Delaware. I initially went in undeclared, and then I was exploring the opportunity to be a philosophy major. And I remember my first semester taking my first philosophy class and realizing this was not the direction, this all thinking direction for me. But at the same time, I took an art course and I fell in love with it. And I knew from the moment that's what I wanted to do. I get to make art every day. how great was that? And that's kind of how the excitement started. And art, you know, is a really broad field, and I didn't at that point know what I wanted to do. So I kind of, I fell into what's called printmaking, which is a really catch-all type of field of study where you do painting and illustration and collage. And it was my senior year that I was introduced to what they call digital printmaking, which was really graphic design. It was Photoshop, it was Illustrator, it was using digital tools to make art. But it was more of a fine art driven perspective, less so about the message or communication. And that I knew at that moment that that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't have any real training in it. And at the time, there weren't these outlets like YouTube or lynda.com that were a great place to self-train. So I decided to continue on to grad school. I went to Maryland Institute College of Art for my master's in digital arts. And there I really fell into digital illustration, digital printmaking, digital art. And I also became what's known as a teaching assistant. And it was two semesters of, you know, assisting a college professor in the classroom. And it was that moment that I fell in love with education. So that really helped to plan out the rest of my career. But as Dave can probably attest to, finding a job at the time being a teacher can be difficult. So I fell into the design field, and I've been really fortunate since then. I've had the opportunity to work for design houses similar to Dave, where you really have a plethora of type of projects to work with. And I began to work with Marvel Comics, Discovery Communications, these really dream opportunities, even though I'm a DC fan. You know, it's still really exciting to get to say you work for Marvel Comics, and it's actually a really nice bonding moment with students now. They really thrive off that because you can have a lot of conversations about comic book art, and that's really exciting. But again, teaching was my passion. I was fortunate enough to get a position at a different institution, at an art institute, where I worked for almost 7 years. And unfortunately, you know, due to just some changes at the institution, I went back to graphic design, where I worked for Sephora Cosmetics, which my wife loved because I got to bring home so many samples. But I missed teaching. So I really didn't make it a year in the commercial industry before an opportunity at Howard opened up. And I was fortunate to see it and to apply. And I actually worked for Dave. Dave was the gentleman that hired me going on 6 years ago to be the coordinator of the digital arts area under him. And kind of the rest is here history. I've been really fortunate to work at HCC and work up through the different areas to be chair of visual arts and now acting associate dean. It's been really quite an exciting adventure.
That's quite a story, you know, and I love that your passion for teaching in the end ended up winning and kind of like just pushing aside all of the superheroes you met on the way. But you mentioned something that I think is really, really important. And I think it's a question that a lot of students have in their minds. When you think about a career in the arts, you know, you're like, I don't see how I can make this as a career. You know, I don't see how this is going to pay well unless I make it into, you know, like Marvel or, you know, something like that, unless I fall into one of those jobs. So when you guys were making those decisions, how did you overcome that and how did you get the support? Because I know that that's another thing is like usually, and I'm a mom, right? And if my child comes and tells me, I want to be a singer, I have to say, and I love the arts and I am in this industry and I'm like, ooh, that's, you know, my son dreams of being a soccer player. And I'm like, I want to support you and yes, but let's have a plan B, right? Let's have a plan B where hopefully you can make, you know, like there's always that hesitation. There's always that you realize that this career is, if you make it, you make it and you really, really can make it. But should we, how to get rid of this? Maybe there's a stigma that comes with it. Maybe that's really what it is. And maybe that's where I find myself even, you know, with my soccer dreams that my son presents to me, right? Maybe that's what we need to get rid of, that stigma that comes when you think about a career in the arts, when somebody comes and says, I want to be an actor, an actress, a designer. How do we approach that conversation? How can we change that stigma, that mindset around that conversation?
I'll go first. I can tell you, when I was in those shoes, so when I was, you know, coming up, and my mother, before she retired, was a budget analyst and planner for the state. So I grew up with finances and here's a credit card and how it works and all this stuff. So I think the question is, well, you know, well, how much money do I ask for? How do I know what to do? And the answer came back, well, how much do you need? And I sort of, that really stuck with me because I didn't know the answer to that. And so I said, well, how much do I want and how much do I need? And so, you know, I was very fortunate that at the time I was single and I didn't have kids and all of this stuff. And so it was just kind of me, myself, and I and my school loans. So my obligations were, well, gosh, I'd like to have, you know, my car as a hand-me-down. So I didn't have a car payment. So I just had insurance and an apartment. So I didn't need a lot of money. What I really needed was a job and experience and, you know, friends and that sort of thing. And so, you know, my first job out of college, I made $27,000 a year. Mm-hmm. You know, now that's almost, you know, you'd need 15 roommates in a house if you lived in DC or, you know, Baltimore City or something. So I really took into account, well, where do I want to be? What do I want to do when I'm there? And how much do I really need? And so for me, it's a kind of a very personal question in that it really depends on the person. For me, that took away a lot of that pressure. And I was very happy that my parents were supportive of that. You know, it's, you know, Dave, you have to go out there and make money. It was more like, well, how much money do you need? And what do you need to be happy? So that was what my focus was. And so, and I'll tell you, when I went in, I mean, in web design in those days, you were able to climb pretty quickly, right? So the reality is I started making a lot more money than my peers who were in traditional print design. It was nice. It allowed you to do more things. I was able to travel and things, but ultimately when I went into education full time, I took a $20,000 pay cut and I never looked back. So, you know, now granted that was still me, myself, and I. Now there's a family, there's other obligations, obviously. So, you know, the finances are much more important, but back then the focus was on making art and learning and being in that environment.
You know, we have portfolio students who ask this question every semester. We sit down during these mentor meetings, and it's really important. I think one of the biggest pieces of advice is I can give is you can't be afraid of rejection. And that's really hard. That's so easy to say out loud. It's very different to practice, you know, obviously in real life. But the art world, whether it's the visual arts or performing arts, in communications, whatever it might be, humanities, you know, it's very competitive. There are very talented people out there. Some of them are self-trained and naturally talented. Others work much harder to arrive at the same skill set and skill levels. But, you know, in the end, your success, you know, for me is based off your drive. And I agree with Dave on all points. There are other, you know, things to account for. You know, what do you need versus want? And that can kind of help set the reality of a situation. But your students should take every opportunity they can get that's thrown them, whether it's an internship or a class with a certain teacher that they might have heard about or had experiences they'd want to share, or even something as simple as office hours with someone they want to be mentored by. All those little pieces make a huge difference, you know, along the way in determining a path. But you can't be afraid of not knowing what you want. You know, I'm a perfect example of that, from philosophy to kind of a broad fine art degree to illustration and graphic design and teaching. I mean, there's so many different spectrums there. And it took me a while to find my place. There's no rush. Obviously, if you have a career path in mind, take advantage of certain opportunities, whether it's huge Disney internships or Pixar internships, if you know you want to do animation, go big. But if you don't know yet, you just know you want to make art, but you're not sure how or where, that's okay too. You can't be afraid of taking advantage of opportunities that fall in your lap. That's how a lot of us get where we are, through experience, not through planning. I don't plan your life at the age of 18. There's so much that can happen along that way. Hiccups, bumps, things you never accounted for. Go with the ride, but take advantage of any opportunity you come across.
You know, Jeremy, you're comment about competitiveness, I remember when I was an intern, so I'm not even graduated yet, and I had an unpaid internship, and I went 2 days a week, and my first big project was I had to cut out all of these graphics for a website. They were buttons. And so there must have been 50, 60 buttons that the designers had made up and just sent me to files. And I had to cut them out, compress them into GIFs, and optimize them for the web and all this good stuff. So I did that and moved on. And my supervisor was the, what was his position? It was like media director. He was the head of the media side. And he called me up to his office and he said, Dave, I was looking at the graphics you picked out, you cut out. They look really good, but these two or three you missed by about one pixel on the left edge. You know how big, we all know how big a pixel is, but for those who don't, it's probably about, if you can see, it's about that big, a tiny little thing. And so he looked at me and he said, if you think you're going to work here with work like this, you're wrong. And I thought, whoa, it's like, it's a pixel. You know, so I think what he instilled in me, and working with him throughout my whole internship, he really, I mean, talk about mentors. He really instilled in me that care and dedication to your craft and really trying to do the best work you can. And then I don't know what it is with me running into folks in graduate school. How many years later, he was one of my professors. Wow. So I said, I'm going to work so hard in his class to show him how much I've learned, you know. But it is very competitive, and you just have to absolutely do your best and try to connect with as many folks as you can.
So having those experiences and understanding the competitiveness of, you know, the arts and you know, the market out there, what's the mission of the Arts and Humanities Division at Howard Community College?
So, well, okay, so now we're jumping from art to the whole division. Okay, so that's a big jump. So we have visual arts and arts and humanities, but we also have communication, we have theater and dance, we have audio and visual media production, we have the humanities, and then we have music, right? So that's a wide range of disciplines and requirements in each of them. So our mission statement's a bit more general than that. You know, what we're after is really, well, many of our degrees are transfer degrees. So our mission is obviously to give, and in those transfer degrees, we have 31 credits of general education core. So many of our students are probably not majors. They are in our area taking general education as part of other degrees. So, you know, in their 2 years at HCC, we might be their only brush with, you know, the arts. And so it's very important for us to inform them how to appreciate the art of their choice. So if you said, well, I love music, I'm going to take a music class as Gen Ed. We hope that you walk away with an appreciation for the creativity in music, the risk-taking in music, how to be an audience member for different kinds of music, how to think about it, how to discuss it, understand how all the different things relate together. So a little bit of history there, you know, and that's a tall order in one class. But generally, that's what we do. And on the transfer side, you know, we want students to have that foundation of their chosen discipline that helps them be hit the ground running as a junior when they transfer out. So a lot of foundational courses, history courses, and all the different disciplines. It'll be easier when we talk about each discipline. But for the arts and humanities as a whole, I think that's where we are. Jeremy?
No, I think you summarized it quite well. I mean, we're such an eclectic division, and each area has, obviously, of course, the very specific areas of focus and pathways and directions in which students wish to go. But in the end, as a transfer institution, our job is to ensure that, you know, they can get from here to there. And we've really focused that on that through a robust and very, I think, stringent and competitive program offering. We've really gotten compliments on the level of work that our students produce upon transfer. We've heard from transfer schools such as UMBC that have been absolutely ecstatic with the skill sets our students come in. And that's really important, and that speaks volumes of the faculty in our area.
Absolutely. So let's break it down. Now that we kind of like looked at the overall umbrella, right? As Dave was saying, is a big umbrella that covers a lot of different areas. Let's start breaking down some of those areas. And let's start with the communication department. What can you tell us about the communication department?
First of all, it's not my discipline. So, you know, I understand their program, but when it comes to the nuances, we really ought to have every single chair of department here to go into details. They know they're so good at what they do, and they know their stuff backwards and forwards. So, but from a general view, our communication degree, again, is a transfer degree. And so Dr. Kirkman, our chair of communication, has worked with Towson. She's worked with Stevenson and I believe College Park and UMBC, looking at their programs and trying to make a degree that plugs in there. So the communication degree, students will take courses in public speaking. They'll take a course in intercultural communication, interpersonal communication. And then there's 12 credits of electives that students can choose in everything from broadcasting to journalism to writing to humanities courses to try and build that transfer at their institution. So if you go, well, I'm going to Stevenson and that's my goal. Well, we know the best courses that they that transfer in there. And you might say, nope, Towson's, I'm going to Towson, end of discussion. Then we go, okay, well then for your 12 credits of electives, we recommend the following. And then that's also in tune with the area students want to go into. So we talk about oral communication, written communication, group communication, and how all of those skills combine together for effective communication. I hate to keep saying the word over and over and over, but that's what it is. We have 3 full-time faculty members, and we have we actually are recruiting a new one. So we'll have 4, hopefully very soon. We're very excited about that. And I will say that communication generates the most credit hours in our division. And they have a gigantic general education component. And because communication is so important, a lot of degrees require a communication course as part of their other degrees in the college. So they get a lot of students from those tracks.
Communications is a really wide, I think, degree, is one that, as you said, open doors, and that it's important, you know, to be able to communicate properly. It's important in any degree, no matter if you're a doctor, no matter if you're a scientist, if you're an engineer, you have to learn how to communicate properly. So absolutely. Now let's talk about, I think, where you're a little more comfortable, the audiovisual multimedia production degree. Tell us about that one.
So audiovisual media production, AVMP, as we love to call it, that's actually housed in the theater area. So that department is theater, dance, and media. And so in the AVMP program, you can learn, let's start with the core classes. So we have your general education core, and all the students in the program will take courses in media writing, broadcasting, history, and you'll have principles of film and media development, story concept and story development. And these are the core classes that we know work at Towson and work at Stevenson. So we worked with the heads of those programs in that foundation sequence. And then, again, much like communication, because there's so many different areas, there's elective credit in the program built in. So if you say, well, I'm gonna be a video person, I'm gonna be in television. So you can fill up your electives with courses in video production, video editing, studio lighting, all kinds of interesting things. But you also may go, no, I'm going to be a sound guy. So then you can take audio production courses and sound design courses and all of that stuff to prepare you to move on to the transfer degree. And we have actually the last time I spoke with Academic Computer Support, they told us that the lab that we have for the video lab is the most powerful computer lab on campus in terms of just raw horsepower, memory, storage, because the demands of video and audio production are so high. We couldn't work with just off the shelf, you know, Apples or Dells or something. You really have to beef them up with processing and storage and all of that stuff. So, we have video cameras students use, digital audio, machines that students use, extensive lighting, tripods, and Chris, you know, you could probably list that actually what they are. I know we just got an inventory of 4K cameras, so we have to really stay, you know, on the cusp. And we have everything from those to GoPros. So depending on what a student wants to do, we have, like, you know, chest mounted GoPro cameras, head mounts, bike mounts, all kinds of things to capture what they want to capture.
And, you know, I remember my times as a student and having to play and having access to all that equipment. It really made a difference, you know, for all of our projects. We went into the classroom, the teacher would bring the cameras, and I remember the feeling like, ooh, and the goosebumps. And all of us were like, wow, you know, we're getting to actually play with this toys. And it's great. That's, I think that enhances, you know, the whole opportunity of learning and you know, from the very first day, it was like, okay, what's your name? Okay, here's your camera. And it was like, wait, I don't think I'm ready for this, right? So it's very hands-on. It's very, very hands-on. And I really appreciated that about HEC, because when I transferred to my four-year school, I went into the full studio TV that they had. And with the knowledge that I had acquired at HEC, I was not intimidated anymore. You know, it was like, oh, okay, more buttons. Just tell me which one does what, because I already learned at HEC how to operate and you know, how to be comfortable, really, when I'm presented with this equipment.
And we're very adamant about staying at the industry standard, because, you know, we can't choose, there's lots of things that will do video editing and audio editing, but we need to choose the ones that students are gonna follow up on at the four-year schools that are preparing them to go out into the field. So we want them to have that background. And also the four-year schools require that we do that. So they say, nope, your students coming in have to have experience in Premiere and Avid. Okay, well, we're gonna make sure that happens. And we actually just got online a audio studio. Chris, I don't know if you've seen it. It's right next to your studio. But it's locked most of the time, is why, unless the teachers are in there with students. But we've got a huge control room with a Pro Tools suite. And then we have the separate studio. So soundproof, you know, echo-proof studio with video communication between the two. So the person doing the audio can communicate with the booth and to capture those sounds. And that's a student facility. I mean, when the students are there, they're coming, they're going, and I hope it doesn't bother you too much. But
now I know where the noise is coming from. Thank you, Dave. So let's talk about humanities. Let's talk about the humanities program. What can you tell us about that one?
Lots of gear switching. So, so humanity, again, you're going to start to see a pattern here where there are certain foundational classes and then a lot of elective credit built in so students can build a transfer of their choice. So our humanities area encompasses philosophy, film, humanities courses, and women's studies. So that's a lot, you know, to cover. And so our film courses, we do Intro to American Cinema, we've got World Cinema, and a lot of specialty courses like European film, things like that. We've got a documentary film course, films of Alfred Hitchcock, things like that. And it's all very theory based. You know, it's not just let's watch movies. It's no, let's watch movies and analyze it. What's the development of this? Where did it come from? And they're very popular courses. And then the philosophy courses about ethics and logic, and Jeremy being a philosophy major at one point could tell you about those. And women's studies is about history of, you know, women's movements and things like, I don't speak well to these genres. And gender studies and things like that. And then the humanities courses are about, like, intro to humanities. A very popular one is the happiness approach to humanities, intro to creative arts, that sort of thing. And so the degree for humanities has, I believe it's 24 credits of elective. So students can pick from any of those disciplines, film, women's studies, philosophy, humanities, to build out a degree that works really well for a transfer into a humanities program at a four-year school. And
since this was a little bit of your background, you know, who should look into humanities, or you know, like, what was that drive that you had that was pushing you to humanities? What was there in you that you wanted to do, or you thought you wanted to do with your career at the time, that, you know, you said, I think it's in the humanities where I'm going to find it?
Well, I just want to make it clear, it was only for one semester before I shifted gears. So this wasn't a long-term part of my academics, but I was interested in the human condition. You know, I really was on how personalities drive choices and how we as a population make overarching decisions in our lives. But, you know, it was a very broad form of understanding that I just, which I think some people will thrive off of. For me, I found that form of personal communication through art and less about theory and philosophy in the end. But that was what pulled me to the humanities and particularly philosophy at the time. But it quickly evolved, in all fairness to philosophy, into the arts very rapidly. But that doesn't mean there's not an aspect of philosophy and humanity and, you know, happiness. I love that course. In the arts, there's a huge correlation between the two. It's just how it's expressed is a bit different.
And, you know, that's why, you know, go back to your story, because you had that idea, but there was already something in you, like, you know, you just said behavior and understanding how that affects and how it drives us and this and that. And yes, you ended up going into something different, but it started from that place. And I just want to go back to letting everybody who's listening, and maybe they already have a career, but there's something, you know, just really inside of them tugging and being like, look over here, look at this other different option right here at HEC, this different career. I know you've been doing this for many, many years, but there's something else in your heart that you want to explore. Or maybe you are somebody who's graduating just now, or you are already in college and you're not enjoying what you're doing. And like Jeremy said, you know, it's okay. It's okay to start with something and then have to switch your path in the middle of it and realize as you're taking your classes many times, that's when you really realize it's like, oh, this class over here that I thought I was going to hate, I actually really am enjoying it. And I love it so, so much that I could see myself doing this every day. I think that at least, and maybe this is just dating myself, but I think that, you know, we thought that once we decided on a career, that was it. And that was our path and we needed to stay there. And if not, it was a failure. And I actually see it as a success. If you're able to discover what you really want as you're going through your path and switch gears, like we're switching gears so quickly today in our conversation, Dave, you know, that's actually, I think, a success in your career. If you can continue to listen to yourself, to listen to your heart and connect with yourself and discover that through the classes you're taking and the conversations you're having with peers and teachers, then you're having a successful career as long as you continue to move forward. Don't be afraid of exploring, you know, the different things. If you want to do arts, not sure where, take different classes. Take different classes and see what really speaks to you. Let's switch gears again here and go into the music program. It's a lot to cover, and that's why we're barely scraping the surface on each one of these programs and just making sure that they each get at least a small highlight on our conversation today. So let's talk about music.
What about it? So maybe we could talk about, here's the interesting thing about music that always gets me, and this happens in dance a lot too, I believe, is that we'll have students coming in at all kinds of different levels. So you have, you know, music students that have been practicing music for, you know, years and years and years, maybe since elementary school. And then you have students that have maybe been practicing music or taking lessons from middle school. And so we've got all kinds of different levels. And as a result, we have classes in the music area so that students can get up to the level they need to be to start in their first semester, which is essentially music theory one. I mean, that's really the course you need to get up to. So now, in terms of the content of music theory one, I wouldn't feel comfortable going into that since that's not my area. But once you're in the music degree, you have the theory courses 1 through 4. And then we've got, I love the music degree because there's so much performance in it. So there's such a mix of the theory and then ear training, keyboard skills, and then ensembles. So you need to join some kind of ensemble. You have to do performances. You have to be part of a group. And then towards the end of the program, they do what's called juries, where the students prepare pieces that they perform in front of the faculty in the recital hall. So, you know, I mean, and it's the whole nine yards. It's the, I'm going to dress. I'm going to dress well. I'm going to perform. I'm going to look and address my audience. You know, you can't just go in there and play like this, that you probably wouldn't get very good jury marks. And so they're preparing you for your auditions to move forward into, you know, competitive music programs. And also it's interesting in music, they have, all of our degrees are 60 credits. That's, you know, MHEC says, the Maryland Higher Education Commission says, well, if you're an institution in Maryland, you're going to be offering an Associate of Arts degree, it's 60 credits. But when they made that change, schools got together and said, well, if we what if we can't do that? What if we can't do, what if this particular discipline, we can't do a decent transfer or get students to know what they need to know in 60 credits? So they applied for and received in music a dispensation to go to 64 credits. So that's the only way that music can fit in everything they need to fit in between your theory courses, your ensemble performances, and all of that stuff, to be able to be at the junior level. And also, our music area was the first to be accredited by an external accreditor. So the college is accredited by Middle States, and the music department has additional accreditation through the National Association of Schools of Music. And so we're very, very proud of that. The music department worked very hard on that to get that.
You mentioned something, Dave, that we haven't really talked about, and it's really, really important. You talked about the experience, and you said this is the whole nine yards. This is as if you were doing a professional performance outside. I want to talk about that because I know that that's true, you know, for everything that HEC has. You talked about the equipment before, and you talked about how important it was to have, you know, really top of the line and an industry standard software and hardware available for the students. When we're talking about music, when we're talking about art, when we're talking about theater, I want you guys to talk about, you know, the vision, right? Because when kids come and audition, or anybody comes and audition for to be part of a play, or when you have this performances that you're putting up with students, it would be really easy to just say, well, these are just students, so we can just be a little more laid back. But I know that that's not necessarily the case. I know that you guys keep it very high in the standards, and I want you to speak as to why that is important and what you're trying to do when you're implementing those standards.
I think it comes from a culture in our at HCC to want to give the best that we can give. And I think that there's many definitions of that when it comes to what you're talking about. You know, the experience of being a student in that discipline. We have high standards, you know, and many of our sister or transfer institutions, and when we've worked with Anne Arundel, and, you know, we communicate with them and Carol and Montgomery and our peers there, I think we all share that. There's a passion for saying, hey, you've chosen, like if you're a major, I think our philosophy is you've chosen to study this field at an academic level. And that means that there are standards. We're going to show you how this works in the field. We're going to show you and teach you how to perform at this high level. And so when it comes to, I can't really speak on music per se in terms of the intricacies of that. I can speak more about visual arts in terms of that. So, you know, maybe I should hand over to Jeremy, but my quick thoughts on that in my classes, and Chris, I'm sure when you and I work together, it's very important that students learn how to talk about their work. That's huge. So if you are an artist and you have an art gap opening and people want to come and talk to you, they don't want to hear, well, gee, what were your thoughts here? Well, I don't know. I just put a bunch of stuff on paper. That might be where you started. Let's be perfectly honest, but things build a life. And so what were your thoughts behind that? What are your intentions? What were your influences? How do you think that's working? Do you think it's successful? And then, you know, that's sort of the theoretical stuff that comes out of your mind, but then there's the vocabulary. So we want to know about the principles of design, and we want to know about the things that you used, your choice of color, your choice of layout, your choice of imagery, your choice of medium. Why, what was your intent behind all of that? And because if you can't do that, then it's going to be very difficult to continue that academic study with other peers and artists and instructors and mentors as you move forward, and patrons. Jeremy, what do you think?
Well, I think as a division as a whole, you know, we feel a sense of responsibility and obligation to our students. You know, it's our job to appropriately train, you know, if that's the right word, or provide an academic setting that helps our students expand upon their interests and their skill set so that it is competitive, so that when they do move to a four-year institution, they come with the ability, as Dave was saying, to speak about themselves or their work, whether it's poetry or arts or music or theater and so forth. You know, and I think that's the type of rigorous academic culture we want to create. And it was the type we felt we had as students and that our students very much deserve. And there are a vast amount of ways, which is what makes arts so fun and humanities and communication, how to approach that. So we fully support the academic freedom of faculty to really build on their knowledge in the classroom. And I think through that, we allow for, as Dave was saying, confidence in one's ability in their work, one's ability to speak appropriately and really fully about the direction of where they're going, why they've achieved those results. And I mean, in their area of study per se, or in a particular piece of work. And that's really important to us, but it all, I think, stems from, as Dave was saying, a culture of accountability by the faculty in the division to create this academic environment for the students.
And along with that, I should mention that our faculty in Arts and Humanities are practitioners in their fields. So, the music faculty, they don't, put their instrument down and go, well, I'm teaching for the next 30 years. So they are involved in concerts and group work inside and outside the college. I know Jeremy and I both do freelance design inside and outside the college. So we're still interacting with clients. We're in the field and living and breathing it. So if something new comes along, oh gosh, did you hear about this? No, I didn't. Oh, but so we're aware of that. And so then we can come out and keep our students up to date as well. So I think the most dangerous thing for a creative person is to silo yourself and, hang it up and think I know everything. That's so wrong to me. I mean, it's important to go out there and talk and experiment and, be willing to make a mistake. That's not necessarily a problem. It's how you handle it that's really important. And
absolutely.
So I love when my students ask me a question and I go, I don't know. I love telling them that. It's like, let's find the answer. So that's a chance for us to work together and say, hey guys, here are methods to approach a problem. How do I troubleshoot? How do I find out what this is? It's critical and creative thinking, which is one of our general education areas. But so active in the field and Jeremy and I and all the art faculty do that, but so do our other disciplines and departments. They all kind of operate that way.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the art and design department. What can you tell us about it?
Sure. Well, it's actually evolved quite a bit in the past 4 years. And that's an understatement. I mean, it's really grown. We've always had the culture, again, of creating a robust department where students really can gravitate towards different areas of study, even within the arts. It can be quite broad. We have foundation studies. We have fine art studies. We have photography, printmaking, graphic design, illustration. We really do offer a lot of area for exploration, which is really wonderful for our students. We want them to be able to dabble and kind of figure out their path as they go. And it's through experimentation, which is really great. But in the past 4 years, the visual arts degree, we sort of did an audit. We evaluated where our responsibilities lied and where our students were. I mean, it turned out 80% of our students are general education majors. And that does fluctuate a little bit, but that says a lot about who's coming through our program, where they are taking courses, what they're interested in studying. And sometimes what's really exciting is we get converts. My favorite is, when we get someone else from an entirely different discipline who comes in, they take an art class and they realize this is what they want to do. And that's always exciting. Not that I ever want to take away from another department or division at all, but it's always a lot of fun for that tug of war. But
so take a class at your own risk, you might fall in love.
Absolutely.
Is that a warning?
I'm really excited to say just recently we were awarded the external accreditation by the National Association of Schools of Art and Design, or NASAD, which is really, it's really a feat because there are only a select few community colleges in the entire country that have that external accreditation in the art department. But as part of our evolution, we've really refocused our mission on getting students from here to there. And you're really following the HCC culture. We now have a 97% credit for credit transfer rate to Towson University. We have phenomenal credit.
In visual arts,
yes. And we have similar strong transfer rates to UMBC. And we even have a golden sheet, if you want to call it, a golden list from MICA of hundreds of courses that have transferred over the years. And that's really important for us, because whether or not our students want to go to a four-year traditional school or a four-year fine art institution, the fact that we've developed these partnerships is really, really important. But it also speaks highly of the type of instruction we're offering in our area, so that students are walking out with both skills-based and theory-based education in the art, so they can speak about the conceptualization of their art and be able to execute it. And that's really important. You know, those two skills complement each other more than ever. And it's really great if you have the skills to execute art, but without the understanding of why you're doing it, you can only take the artwork so far. So we really do focus on both those foundational skills and that theoretical exploration, whether it's through critical or creative thinking as part of our gen ed or in our more robust classes. And lastly, I want to mention one of the newer classes we offer, which is really important for us, is called Foundations in Visual Arts. And this is a very new course. It rolled out with a new degree only last year. And what's really important about it is it introduces students to the art world. And that was not a course that I really had in college. And why that matters is because in the art world, in the visual arts, whether it's graphic design, illustration, sculpture, ceramics, printmaking, there's so much to choose from, and it can be very daunting and overwhelming. And so for students to have that fundamental foundations and understanding of how broad the arts can really be, they began to, even if only just an inkling, began to develop, to establish their path academically, maybe even professionally. And it gives our students, I think, a leg up in, you know, academics in general for the arts, because it really helps give them a supportive starting point to start their academic career. So it's a very exciting course for us.
We only have about 10 minutes left, and, you know, I feel like there's so much more that we still need to cover. I feel like I'm going to have you guys back just to talk, you know, dance and theater and everything else that we haven't even mentioned today. But I think it's important, as people are looking ahead, as people are, you know, making plans for the fall, that we talk about, you know, where we are today and how that's shaping, how the division is looking at the semesters ahead, and what the options are going to be and what it's going to look like. So if you can tell us, you know, how we continue to adapt and be flexible with the situation that it is and how you guys are planning for the upcoming semesters, I think it's really, really important to shed some light on that.
I think Jeremy, as a member of the reopening committee,
Sure, absolutely. I mean, the arts and the humanities division is at the forefront of, I think, technological strategic thinking. And this is applicable to music, to theater, but just to give an example, again, I can speak more strongly from my area during this transition, but we're looking at virtual machines. So there, with the arts, there is the... you know, there is one of the hurdles of technology. I mean, and that, you know, whether it's computer access, software access, and for many students in our area, that's not always a financially attainable resource. So we want to do our best to ensure that during this transition with COVID-19 and learning remotely, that we are giving our students the best strategic advantage they can have. So with IT, they've been really wonderful exploring different opportunities, but virtual machines are coming forward. We are very much adopting and excited about remote learning. We've heard wonderful success stories about just from even theater and dance in particular, how choreographing dances remotely and then publishing those online so that students can learn from the home. We're doing everything we can to bring the classroom into a student's home. And we're taking advantage of all technological opportunities we can that IT has been absolutely phenomenal in giving us.
So if students or people have questions, they want to connect with you guys, they want to find out more and how they can maybe get started, or if they're like me, where they were, you know, when I was a student and I was taking those classes with Dave, and they're feeling, yes, communications is for me, or like they're like Jeremy, I know that I want to do something with this, and are taking a class and end up taking a class in arts and fall in love, where can they find that information? How can they get in touch with you guys and explore what a career in the arts might be like?
I wonder if we could give you the emails of the department chairs. I mean, you know, if somebody communicated with me and said, hey, I saw your interview, I'm really interested in music, I think, well, thank you very much. It's nice to hear from you. I'm going to turn them directly over to Dr. Meng to learn all about music. I mean, can we do that?
We can certainly put the links, you know, okay, for the different emails. But if we had, you know, like an email where they can connect with, I don't know, with maybe you, Dave, sure, or a phone number or something like that, where they can just ask that first question and then be directed,
absolutely,
to that person.
Happy to do that. My email is dbeaudoin. It's dbeaudoin at howardcc.edu. And I'd be happy to help any way I can. Phone numbers kind of, you know, we're not around right now, so.
And Jeremy, if they have questions for you, if they want to talk superheroes or something like that, where can they reach you?
You opened the floodgates. No, they're always welcome to reach out to me at jbomberg@howardcc.edu. That's jbomberg at howardcc.edu.
You know, that's a full conversation, a full interview on its own, DC or Marvel, like that.
It's DC all the way. There's no conversation.
There's no need for that. Never mind. Is there anything else before we wrap our conversation up today that you guys wanted to share with anybody listening and watching this morning?
I don't think so, Chris, but maybe just to thank you for your thoughtful questions. And, you know, I hope that was informative, our responses.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was a great conversation. It's great to be talking about the department that I am a part of at Howard Community College, to talk about, you know, where my career started, to talk about everything that has really helped me get to where I am today. From the moment I was in the classrooms and I was taking those classes and I was learning, as Dave said, to really think critically about what I was putting out into the world. That made a difference, because very much like probably many of the students, you know, coming into HCC today, I just knew that I loved TV, that I loved radio, that I loved acting. I just knew that I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed being part of it in any form. Like I was happy in one of my internships, just carrying cables around, you know, like I was really, really happy and I was mesmerized by everything that I was seeing on the studios. And, you know, it was like, wow, I'm part of this, right? And, you know, maybe students are there today as well. But I didn't know how to express that at the time. You know, I didn't know where that was coming from. There was a little something in me that made me super happy and felt really, really good. And as I was taking these classes and as I was exploring, I remember one of my biggest challenges was to make a poster that was showing my ideas. And I don't know if you remember, Dave, but I was like, how do I put my ideas into this one poster that's going to show who I am? And I remembered, my hair ended up becoming words, you know, and it was one of the most creative things and the most fulfilling things that I've ever done, you know, in my life, quite honestly, because
cool.
It was a huge challenge for me to be able to just look at it and come up with an idea on paper and be able to talk about it later. That was the key thing, to, as you said, Dave, to be able to talk about it, not just do it because I have an idea and I'm just going to put it on paper, but then to actually really look at it and say, how can I make it better? Or what is this really showing? What is this really telling about myself and about the art?
I often tell students the ideas are the hardest part. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the way they'll come in and they'll look at the software and things that we're doing for video editing and they feel very intimidated. But I say, guys, this is at certain levels, this is very easy. And so they start to pick that up and they say, when do we get to do what we want? Because the projects are very structured. You know, when do we get to do what we want? When do we get to do what we want? Then the last project comes around where they get to do whatever we want. And they go, I don't know what to do. I know. It's very hard. So yep. We do a lot of brainstorming exercises and things to try to get those creative juices flowing. And it's very important to teach them, well, you know, if you're sitting by yourself in a room waiting for inspiration, you might get lucky. But the best thing to do is talk to me, talk to your friends, talk to your other faculty members and bounce ideas back and forth. I'm always happy to do that with my students and, you know, put your feet up on the desk and, well, what are you thinking? And just, you know, have stuff flow and ideas come. And that's part of that process.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. learning to push the buttons, anybody can do that, but learning to express your ideas clearly, that's where good education and that's where your personal key, you know, and your personal print comes in. So thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Dave, so much for this wonderful conversation. Thank you, everybody, for listening and watching.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.